A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Away for another Vaughan boundary.
Well, he's a great fieldsman, Philip Tufnell. He often falls over and he's brought it into his batting as well.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Vaughanee and Tuffers Cricket Club, the podcast brought to you by the Daily Telegraph, where we chat about all things cricket and cricket related. My name is Ben Wright and I'm joined as usual by Messrs Vaughan and Tufnell. And as usual, we will be discussing a test victory for Ben Stokes' side because, as usual, England casually chased down nearly 300 runs in the fourth innings at Headingley and made it look easy in the process. It is all very unusual and means that they have whitewashed the Black Caps to seal a memorable 3-0 win against the World Test champions. Elsewhere, it is the end of an era for England's one-day side, as history-making captain Owen Morgan has announced he will be retiring from the sport. Morgan has struggled for both fitness and form in recent months, but he will undoubtedly go down as one of the greatest captains England has ever produced in any sport. He transformed his side into the most feared in the world and will be looking back on his time in charge, discussing who might replace him and asking what now for the one-day side. And a real treat this, we'll also be speaking to New Zealand bowler Trent Bolt. Mike and I caught up with one of the kings of swing to discuss a wide range of topics, from the weirdness of seeing his former skipper Brendan McCullum dressed in England kit to how he would bowl to his Rajasthan Royals teammate Joss Butler. I know correlation doesn't necessarily equal causation, but since we launched this podcast, the England's men team have played three tests, three ODIs, and they've won the lot. Yeah. Lots to unpack in that latest test and across the series, but two things I wanted to highlight. One is a stat and one's a feeling. First, the stat. New Zealand took 222.5 overs to score 657 in the match at Headingley. And England knocked off the required runs in just 121 overs. So that's nearly three an over, which is a very reasonable run rate for a test match. Plays 5.4. England scored 5.4 and over all the way through the test. And the
madness. Ben, can I just stop you? What did you say at the start in that intro? Correlate, what was it?
I think what he was trying to say, Mike, is that our podcast has got something to do with England winning.
So I don't want to take all of the credit. I mean, the players have obviously done a bit as well. New management.
Yeah, they've done all right.
New management, that's probably helped. But it is uncanny that since we've launched this podcast, England are unbeaten.
Well, let's take it. There's got to be something in it.
But the feeling I wanted to talk about was that despite the fact England were chasing nearly 300 runs in the fourth innings again, that win felt predictable. It was sort of even a little anticlimactic. It's a deeply weird sensation for an England cricket supporter.
It is indeed. I mean, these three test matches, they've all been fantastic. I mean, they've been knockout, edge of your seat stuff, seen so much good cricket being played. And, you know what, three test matches in which the side batting last chases down 300, Mike. I've never sort of heard of it before. It was another pleasure. It was a pleasure to be at Headingley yet again to watch this England side. They are on a roll.
This test team in 3 weeks has done something that I saw the one-day team do after the World Cup in 2015. it's very clear that a message has been sent that they're going to play Test cricket completely different to what I've ever seen. Yeah. And that goes back to great, great sides of the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. It's risky. It's flamboyant. It's brutal. Will it work every week? Will it work overseas? We'll have to wait and see. But I tell you what, they're going to have a go at playing this brand of cricket every week. Whether it's going to be silly at times and stupid, I think it possibly will be. And at times at Headley in the first innings, it was like cricket that was far too risky. Look at the way that Ben Stokes got out. But his message is very clear. And that's what I like about them, that they're sending a message. And Ben sent a message in the press conference last night to all players in the county game. If you want to get in this England side, you've got to arrive in your Ferrari. if you arrive in a two-seater or a slow, you ain't playing. Simple as that. So
two-seater? Was that a tandem?
Well, it's one of those. Well, those C5s, remember back in the day, that those electric things that first came out. You've got to be scoring fast, being aggressive, taking on the opposition, trying to impact the game to get into this England side. And let's wait and see whether it can work against, you know, teams that play a bit better, get their selection better than New Zealand in conditions that aren't quite as true and flat that we've seen in the last 2 weeks. But I don't think they'll take a back foot. I don't think they'll stop trying to play this aggressive style of cricket. So we're in for a nice ride, I feel, Phil.
Yeah, the thing I've been impressed with, though, is, OK, the batting, you know, amazing. Wow, that can, you know, be derailed and we're going to have to sort of accept that and what have you. But what I've been impressed with is Ben Stokes' captaincy in the field. I think his field settings, always looking to attack, always having slips, had a couple of men on the drive and things like that. And when they went short, they had about five men. So, you know, if you're going to go short and bowl leg side, at least have a load of fellas there to catch it. And I was really impressed with the way he handled Jack Leach. I'm sorry to go on about the spin bowlers, but I was very impressed with the way he handled him, how he made him feel that he was part of the attack. He was a sort of a relevant part of the attack and he was a wicket-taking option, kept fields up when people hit them for sixes and was always just tinkering and sort of talking to Jack Leach. I thought he captained the side beautifully in the field. I really did.
Leach was man of the match. He was also, he was brought in very early in that first innings, got five for in the first innings. And then in the second innings, he opened, I think, didn't he, for a bit, because there was a short stint before lunch. So it's a real a confidence boost to that, surely.
Well, I think sometimes with your spinner, you have to bowl them at times that, for one, the opposition don't expect, and for one, the team go, oh, wait a minute, you're giving a, you know, left-arm spinner a lot of trust. So giving him the new ball in the second innings, to me, just sent the message, you're going to be our linchpin in this second innings. And Jack Leach must have felt $1 million from his first inning fifer, getting that wicket with his first ball. Will Young just missed a straight one. That's what captaincy is all about. You've got to make people feel really good in the side. And I agree with Phil. I think Ben Stokes, inside three games, naturally has just looked an incredible leader. Very clever cricket thinker, but not turns in terms of cleverness that we've seen before. I think it's cleverness in terms of thinking outside the box, you know, doing things that we're not seeing in this era. Bringing mid on for the spinner. When the ball's spinning and the left hand is on strike, when it is spinning, it's very hard to hit straight because it grabs in the surface. It always goes square of the wicket. So he told Michael Brace, well, go on, try and whack one more over mid on. He had that fielder on the square leg boundary in place, that Crawley. And obviously he went for the big shot and it went square of the wicket and they got the wicket. So tactically, he's been excellent. In actual fact, if you look over the three games, Lords it did a bit more. There was a little bit more English tradition, a bit more seam and a bit of swing. Not as much swing, but certainly seam. So you'd expect England to get 20 wickets at Lords in those conditions. The next 2 weeks, it hasn't swung and seamed. And that's always been a question. So we'll, you know, revel in the batting and how destructive it's been. But for the England side to get 20 wickets in the last 2 weeks on a flat one at Trent Bridge and a pretty flat one at Headingley, you know, I think that's almost, it won't be talked about as much as the Bairstows and the Roots and, you know, the attacking nature of the batting. But for them to get 20 wickets on those two flat wickets is a tremendous effort.
And also, I've got to stick my hand up for Matthew Potts as well. He just looks bored. He looks
relentless, Phil. Relentless.
Relentless.
He looks like one that's going to be in the side for a while, doesn't he?
Absolutely.
He's Scotty Boland from Australia, really relentless.
But I think he also, you know, he could have had more wickets. I think he was a bit, I think he's been a bit unlucky in this test series. He could have had another 5 or 10 wickets.
He's an athlete, Phil.
He is an athlete, but then also, see, the seamers are buying into that slightly fuller length as well. Yeah. Back in the old days, you know what I mean, you'd get clipped or driven 3 or 4 times and it would be the slip out, extra cover, mid-wicket, barney, barney, blah. But no, Ben Stokes is just going, no, we're going to keep the 2 or 3 slips in. You keep pitching up. There was a wonderful example of it against Stuart Broad. I can't remember who, but he got clipped a couple of times and then whacked through extra cover. The slips were there. But then Stuart also then just kept going that full length, looking for the drive, looking for that little bit of movement to get the outside edge, and it came.
Yeah.
And so it just looks like everyone is just like really buying into this, and that's field placing, batting, all sorts.
I look at England now, and if they commit to this style, realistically, they only need in the first innings to bat for 50, 60 overs, and they're going to get over 220, 240.
It's ridiculous.
And that's if they bat badly. Yeah. Well, this is what they're buying into. You know, as an opposing team now, when you play, so if I'm planning to play against England, I'm doing what England do to other teams, i.e., you set aggressive fields and you just go for wickets, try and bowl them out. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Don't even think about going on the defensive. Just try and bowl them out. Because if you allow them to, if you spread the field so that you're better balls, you look at Johnny Bairstow when he comes in, within 15 balls, the field spreads. So you bowl your best ball on off stump, plays a forward defence, cover points on the boundary, square legs on the boundary, gets an inside edge, he gets one, plays it late, goes square of the wicket on the offside, he gets one. So you actually can't keep him on strike. So your best balls are scoring. So if I'm playing against England, if India go for any kind of tactic at Edgbaston starting on Friday, I'd keep the field up and I'd say to England, all right, you're gonna hit the boundaries anyway, but we're going to keep fielders in catching positions and we're going to try and bowl you out.
You have to fight fire with fire, I guess. Away from the test side, there's obviously more big news today in English cricket, and that's that Owen Morgan is retiring from international cricket. And we spoke about his form last week and whether he would make it to the T20 World Cup. Looks like he's not going to. Were you surprised about that decision? It's obviously not that long to go until the World Cup.
I think he's got it absolutely spot on, and I always knew that he would. I have a huge amount of respect for Owen Morgan, and I think if you look at English cricket and the history of it, there's been lots of test match captains that still get mentioned for what they did in their time as a test captain. Owen Morgan's really the only white ball captain that's really moved our game into a different kind of space. You know, what he's done with the white ball team, the mentality. And Ben Stokes mentioned yesterday that, you know, the captain that he's trying to emulate is Owen Morgan in test cricket. He wants to be that captain in test cricket that people go, oh, do you remember what Ben Stokes did to the test match team? Owen Morgan has been an incredible leader, a brilliant batter at times. He struggled of late, and I think he's got his decision, Phil, absolutely spot on. He must have been looking himself in the mirror in the last few weeks thinking, wait a minute, there's X, Y, Z that aren't in this side and I'm still in it and I'm not playing quite as well. And his captaincy will always make a 10% sway because he's that good, but you know, Joss Butler will be equally as clever out in the Middle East. Yeah. Such a good, probably the best white ball player in the world. So Owen Morgan has taken England's white ball team from pretty much in the gutter to being at the top of the world. And now, not only that, I think in leadership, it's about what happens once you leave. You know, if the team suddenly dip and the team don't win for the next 10 or 15 years, you've actually not left the team in a great state. I think he's left this England white ball team with a captain like Joss Butler in an incredible position. So he's made the right call at the right time.
Yeah, not many get the opportunity to leave a legacy, do they, so to speak? And he's left a legacy, really, for this England white ball setup and team. And now he leaves and he's leaving it in safe hands, I think, with Joss Butler as well. Well done, Morgs. Well done, Morgs. As you say, he can look back at his time as England captain and be hugely proud, and as you say, have left something behind. He's been wonderful for the game.
The only thing about Joss Butler is obviously he takes on the captaincy. Bit of chat about him possibly returning to the test side, maybe opening. If he's captain of the one day side as well, is that too much of a workload?
Well, get him going at the top of the order. Why not? The bowl is petrified. You mentioned 2.5 batters have to just get in. Well, start at the top. I heard Kumar Sangakkara, and he deserves the credit for mentioning it. And for 10 minutes, I thought, oh, that's stupid. How can that be possible? And after 10 minutes, I thought, why not? Why not? I mean, Zach Crawley and Baz McCullum spoke yesterday. He wants to stay. He's loyal, yeah. Baz McCullum, and he will give players a lot longer in the side. He's not going to swap and change. So I think that Zach Crawley will get another few games. But if these balls are going to continue to not do as much, and you really want to set your stall out to be ultra-aggressive and you want to change the way Test cricket is played and you want people to go, do you remember that England Test team from 2022? They ripped Test cricket apart. Why not just rev them up with everyone that can launch? Yeah.
Livy. And why not start at
Well, why not? You know, Livingston, why not? And you kind of think, if there's a week where you think it's not going to spin a great deal and you just need a part-time spin who can just bowl a little bit of this, a bit of that, well, Livingston's your perfect player for
also,
that kind of
if
role.
Butler's opening and keeping, you've got room for Livingston lower down the order.
Well, I don't think you can. He certainly can't open and keep in Test match cricket. But the problem will be, and I'm sure they will ask a question of Joss, but I think it's a tall order to captain your country in white ball cricket, to be a prominent player in the IPL, and let's not look away from the IPL. It's a massive earner for him, and he deserves that, and he should be playing the full IPL. If you play Test cricket on the back of international white ball, being the captain, IPL, maybe another franchise league around the world, and Test cricket, he might as well sell his house because he's never ever going to be in it. And I know true, and I think he's a family man. He's got a couple of lovely young children. I get the feeling that it might be just a little bit too much. But if he wants to do it, and Zach Crawley, and I hope he can get his form, and I hope he can get a few runs because I like the way that he plays. But if that opportunity in that place becomes available, I don't think. I mean, Ben Stokes said the county players now know that they want to play aggressive. So those that play at the top of the order and play like Geoffrey Boycott, Alistair Cook, myself, I don't think they've got a chance. Yeah. You know, I think the message has been sent loud and clear that they want Ferraris at the top of the order. They don't want any. They don't want plodders.
Yeah, I don't play in the IPL, and I'm not captain of England, and I'm never in my house either.
But that's for other reasons.
You're in your house now, Phil. I can see your lovely conservatory.
What do you reckon, Phil? Would you go ultra aggressive?
Well, see, I'm thinking that we might need just one fella there just to sort of try and set a bit of a base. I'm not sure, but I mean, you're talking me round here, Mike. You're talking me round.
I'm just excited about what's possible. I mean,
talking of Ferraris, one guy who should get a mention was Hampshire's James Vince. He smashed 129. I don't know if you saw this. 129 off 62 balls to beat Somerset in the Vitality Blast on Thursday. Do you think he's going to get a call up?
Well, he's got a chance. He's got a chance. But I just think it's all
those
very,
are Ferrari figures.
I don't know. Well, they are Ferrari figures, but you just sometimes need, when the ball's swinging and everything, you've got to get past that initial stage. Otherwise, you are going to have those 55 for sixes a few too many times.
Phil, honestly, I've listened closer to Ben Stokes' messaging. The more the ball swings, the harder they're going to go.
Well, that's what Baz used to
say. They're just going to smack the lacquer off it.
They're going to, honestly, they're buying into this. And that's why Jason Roy, James Vince, these players that have been in the Test game before and got out playing a huge amount of shots, and we criticise them for it.
Yeah.
I don't think this management will care.
No,
Baz, they'll be saying, play even more shots.
Yeah, well, that's when I did that, which is a fantastic show on Netflix. This could go anywhere. with me and Baz going around.
Do you promote that every podcast for?
But he said to me, "Do you know that? You know his last game when he got the quickest 100. They were in a very similar position. I think they'd lost two or three quick wickets against Australia on a green top, and he said, "Well, listen, I don't know whether I've got the technique to hang around here, there's one going to have my name on it." So he just said, "Well, I'm going to run towards danger and absolutely tee off," and he got the quickest. So that is definitely his philosophy, I think.
They're going to. Definitely. So, someone like Dominic Sibley, Sam Robson, Rory Burns, who are just traditional star players that like to bat for time. I'd be amazed if they get picked in this group. Honestly, I'd be absolutely amazed because it's going against everything that Ben Stokes has spoken about. He will be looking. Zach Crawley, they'll be hoping, gets runs because he's a very popular player in the group, and we've seen that he's got a game on him if he can get that right. But if he keeps getting low scores, you can't just keep him in the side because you like him. You know, he's got to get runs. If that position does become available, I'm pretty sure they will go for a style of player that can be dynamic. Yeah.
So we're delighted to be joined by the New Zealand fast bowler, and more importantly, the highest scoring number 11 in Test history, Trent Boult.
Exactly.
what do you take more pride in, your wickets or your runs?
I take more pride if you call me an all-rounder, but yeah, I'll work towards that at some point.
Hey, Trent, just on your batting, you consider there's just me and Ben. Phil's away filming Tipping Point, but he was more intrigued about your batting than your bowling, Phil. He says you're in his a lot. I think you're better than him, by the way. I think you score far too more runs than he did. He's intrigued about your technical side. He wants to get into your mind of the technical side of Trent Boult's batting. Just give us an insight.
Yeah, there's been a couple of theories over the years, but yeah, I wouldn't say I have a consistent prelim, a preliminary movement. Yeah, I've always worked off the philosophy that a moving target is harder to hit than a stationary one.
Your stumps aren't moving.
Yeah. No, I do love my batting, but just something takes over me when I get out there, and I make a lot of noise. I'm aware of it. Some say I'm putting it on, some say I'm being myself, but I just like having a bit of fun and giving us bowlers something to bowl at, really.
Just so you say you make a bit of noise. You shouting? What you doing out in the middle?
Generally, I try to find someone just to talk to on the opposition, and generally there's two helmets right next to me underneath my nose, so I'll look to have a conversation with them. Otherwise it's the keeper in first slip, but you've got to make sure the calling's nice and clear so there's no run outs, and then let the blade fly.
What kind of conversations are you having?
Yeah, just anything to settle me. I love to know if there's a bit of turn, first of all. I'm going to get bounced. It's pretty obvious when there's a leg slip and about 3 men out on the leg side. But everyone always puts back a third man to me as well, which is a hot zone for me. So I might have to learn a few shots.
So let's just break it down. We will get on to your bowling, obviously. But you're facing quick bowling. What's your mindset?
Stay nice and still. Don't premeditate, and look for the ball to cut. Really, and then I'll look at the big screen and see that I'm not being still, and I'm premeditating a lot, and I'm looking for anything really. So, it depends who you're with. Obviously, if you're with a set batsman, I'm obviously going to make sure he farms all the strike. But if it's Saudi or some sort of other lower order batter, it's generally a competition who can hit the style of shot.
And what about spin? I believe, is it true that you think you're the best player of spin in the team? Is that right?
Oh, I don't think that. That's what they think. You don't know me well enough, but I don't like talking myself up. I love right arm off spin. I think it's just such an attractive delivery to target. And obviously, it's not going to hurt too much if you get one spun into your leg as opposed to one at 145k. So, I should be saying I hate spin, actually. I should be saying, I really struggle with spin.
You've opened yourself up now. You're never going to face a spinner again.
Yeah, exactly.
How do tail-enders practice in the nets? Do you have to practice for getting a lot of short stuff?
No, horrible. Like, I hate the nets. If I'm going to get hit, I might as well get hit in the game rather than a couple of days before the game in the nets. But, so there's a net bowler or two that tickles my fancy. I'd like to face him. But otherwise, it's just a light bowl, a little massage, and a bit of a kick around with the soccer ball. And then I've pretty much ticked all my boxes, yeah.
So now, not serious stuff, but you as a bowler, I don't really want to go through too many of your exploits at Trent Bridge, but that last session, bowling to someone like Johnny Bairstow, just take us through a bowler's mind, what you're thinking.
It doesn't happen like that too often, but it was a phenomenal kind of session. The numbers that came out of it obviously were incredible, but yeah, test cricket is one of those things. It's a huge challenge to, I suppose, battle the conditions, the day in, day out, having to turn up as a bowler and be on the money with accuracy and pace, etc. And yeah, to go down onto the last couple of hours on day five, when you really need to kick and show what you got, and a guy's playing like that, it's a huge challenge. But yeah, Johnny's capable of doing that. He's done it many times in all formats, and you know, him and Ben really took the game to us there, and phenomenal game to be a part of. But yeah, it was a tricky one, but yeah, good fun to be a part of.
Can you so we heard last week from Marcus Trescothick, who told us about Baz McCullum in the dressing room at tea time, basically said to the England guys, look, it's either a win or a loss. We're going all the way. What was said in the New Zealand dressing room at tea time on that last day?
Oh, we spoke about how we're going to get them out. We knew they were going to come hard. The guys know Brendan well enough to know the style of cricket that he'll be pushing in that changing room. And yeah, we had a few chats. We spoke about the bouncer plan, how we can try, you know, force a wicket that way. And yeah, I thought, obviously, they played it very well. Johnny had no fear, took it, gave it to us pretty hard. And yeah, I thought we made the adjustment to get out of that plan and go to something else quickly. But yeah, I've had a few comments in the media and a few questions asked whether we should have tried that. But I think you got to. You'd be more frustrated if you came off the field and just thought, if we just banged it around the stumps and just waited for something to happen. I thought we tried to make a play and it didn't work. But doesn't always work. I think it doesn't always come off from a batting point of view that they chase it down like that. But yeah, a heck of a game and bloody great for Test cricket, really. It got a lot of people watching, got a lot of people talking, which is more important as well.
Totally. I mean, you talk about the bowling the short ball, and lots been made of that. Did you just think that was your best chance of getting a wicket? Was it the data telling you that, or was it the conditions?
I suppose we look at history and how we've bowled as a side. I think it's a hard one for Waggy to be sitting on the sideline for a guy that's been doing it for us so well. Yeah, I think you've got limited options when you've got quite a soft ball, a very, very good wicket and a very racy outfield, and not a frontline spinner playing. No offence, Braces, if you're listening. But yeah, you've only got so many options. But yeah, it was a beautiful wicket. I thought the ball didn't really swing around much, didn't really seem much as well. But yeah, it was a very good test of your skills and how good you are.
And Trent, you mentioned the ball. I mean, it's kind of feeling like in the series against England, it was every three or four overs, you know, the fielding side would be up to the umpires with that stupid device. Oh, it's out of shape. What's happening with these balls?
I haven't bowled enough with the Duke to probably make a fair comment on it, but as a collection of cricket around the world, I think there's been a lot of chat about balls. You know, one day cricket, I'd love for one ball to come back into one day cricket to see the things that inspired me to take up fast bowling and swing bowling, reverse swing. I think reverse swing's dead. You don't really see that these days, and I truly think that swing bowling's dying as well. To not be able to shine the ball and, you know, spit on the ball and gloss it up is, I suppose, forcing people into trying other things, banging it in short for a couple of hours and putting seven catches back on the leg side. I think, you know, I fell in love with watching Wasim Akram, Chaminda Vaas, Dale Steyn, watching these guys bend it around corners. And it's a big thing for me. I want to motivate guys, especially kids back in New Zealand, to want to pick up a ball and swing it around and, yeah, to do the things that I fell in love with. But I'm not too sure where that sits. I think, yeah, it hasn't really swung a white ball cricket either. I think the only times it really swings is at about 11:15 at night in Mumbai. And that's for about 10 or so seconds. So you've got to be on the mark there as well. But, yeah, it's a big challenge, I think.
Well, that's a really good point, Trent. I mean, obviously COVID has put pay to you guys being able to spit on the ball. Do you think we have to revisit that? Because I'm with you. I think there's many great aspects of the game that I love. Look, I love seeing Johnny Bairstow launch it out of the ground. I love seeing, you know, real quality spin, but they need a pitch to be able to give them a bit of purchase. But the other aspect, I just love the ball when it's swinging. You know, I just think it's one of, as you say, it's one of the things that we were brought up watching, and you know you've got to be skillful to play against it. But if you play an innings and you get a score against a swing ball, you go, you know what, you go back to your room and go, I've done something very special today. Surely we've got to revisit that to try and give you swing bowlers, not just swing, pacey swing bowlers, you know, that ability to produce that skill.
Yeah, well, first of all, we're testing most of the days. No one's got COVID. I think we're past that aspect of you know, worrying about infecting each other or something like that. I spoke to Big Stewie Broad before that Nottingham game and asked him, when was the last time you remember someone really swinging it nicely? And he struggled to think. You guys probably watch more cricket than I have, but even the first game at Lord's, I thought that was more nip and wicket kind of bowling as opposed to out-and-out swing bowling. And, yeah, 70 wickets on the first day, it was a heck of a game, but you know, also three big hundreds scored in that game, I suppose, and, you know, some, you know, the batters had their chance to shine as well. So, yeah, hey, I don't have the answer for it, but as a left-arm swing bowler, I would love to see that thing swinging around a little bit more as well.
What do you have to be thinking about when you're bowling with the white ball? Have you got to be varying your pace, angle? Does it mean that you have to sort of go through the variations a lot?
Yeah, and you've always also got to ask yourself the big challenge as a bowler is that you're not going to rock up every day and it's going to be swinging nicely for you and you're just going to have your day in the sun every day. I think the definition or the marker of a good bowler is his ability to find new ways to get wickets and when the balls are not doing what you want them to do and, you know, how good are the skills in your toolbox in a way. And you guys probably see the three-quarter balls and the change of paces and the bounces that you try to use. All those skills that you've had to learn, I suppose, to try combat good wickets plus good batters is a forever learning skill. But I love that side of it. I love, you know, trying to test myself and, you know, see how good I really am kind of thing. But, it's a big challenge, definitely.
How much practice do you have to give a delivery before you're confident of taking it out into the pressure zone?
I think you've never nailed it. Yeah, always have better days than others. I've tried to develop a knuckleball. You know, I can bowl it 10 out of 10 times better than nets, and one flew out of my hand with about a litre of dew on my hand at one kitty a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, you never quite nailed it until you're out there in front of 30,000 people and, you know, a couple of billion watching you. So, yeah, there's a lot of pressure on you.
You know, on bowling in itself, I mean, in the UK at the minute, there's this great debate about what's right and what's not right in terms of getting a bowler fit for bowling. You know, England at the minute, Jofra Archer, Mark Wood, Ollie Stone, Saqib Mahmood, Ollie Robinson's had injuries. You know, they all seem to be getting stress fractures. And the old school bowlers say, oh, they just need to bowl. You know, they don't bowl enough. The backsides aren't big enough. I think Fred Shroom, you're going to need a big backside. Because you're a bowler that plays all three formats. Very rarely injured, whether that's fortune or not. You play pretty much all the time. You're running bowling 85-plus all the time. What's the skill to that and what's the kind of mentality required for that?
Yeah, I've done a lot of interviews. I had a stress fracture in my back when I was 20, and I've always said that I was so happy that happened to me, basically, just because of the learning that it gave me and, the respect and the understanding that's needed to A, get to the level of international cricket and B, stay there. And, you know, I learned a lot about what is needed. And my mum actually gave me a cutout of Men's Health magazine, which a shirtless Mitchell Johnson was on the front of it. And I was fascinated with this guy that, you know, he had four stress fractures before 22, I reckon it was. And he just kept coming back. And I was like, why is he coming back? Like, you know, why does he want it so much? And he just loved the challenge of A, the physicality, the fitness, pushing himself into new areas and then obviously getting that ball in his hand and standing up in moments when it really counted for the lads and the team and the country. And basically from there, I just got kind of obsessed with the running. I do love the gym. I love doing stuff that's kind of adding to me as a bowler and the ability to stay on the park and, you know, fly from India and play a test match a couple of hours later and all those kind of things. But there's no golden rule, I think, or recipe for each bowler because every action is totally different. You know, you look at Jofra's action compared to Mark Wood's, compared to Timmy's or Waggy's, whoever it is, there's so many different things that work for different players. It's just the, I suppose, the determination and trying to find out what works for you.
And you mentioned running. Give us an insight into your kind of training methods of how much running you do.
I'm very lucky to have Chris Donaldson, who's been the trainer ever since I started 11 years ago. He's a New Zealand sprinter, Olympian, Commonwealth Games. And he, yeah, got me, I suppose, infected with the running drills, a lot of fartlek running, which is basically straight line stuff, but over a combination of distances. Rugby's a big sport back in New Zealand, which they test through a thing called the Bronco, which is 20s, 40s, 60s on repeat. Yeah, and I don't know, I think bowling is such a rhythm-based kind of timing exercise that when you can run and just have that kind of natural athleticism, it's just going to really, really help you when it comes to running up and hitting the crease. And yeah, I've changed over the years. I've enjoyed kind of the 1500, 3K kind of stuff towards more sprinting stuff kind of a couple of times a week. But yeah, it's just forever changing with what the body needs.
But presumably actually bowling is a key thing. One of the things, I was talking to somebody in the England setup recently, he was suggesting that with the COVID protocols, it's meant that bowlers have had to go through these sort of multiple periods of inactivity, and maybe they can run and do the gym, but they can't actually bowl. And he thinks that that might be why lots of people are getting stress fractures at the moment. Do you think there's something in that?
Yeah, I think so. Well, New Zealand's a small place as it is, and I can probably count the amount of indoor facilities we have on one hand. So there's not much bowling going on down there. So you've kind of got to, I suppose, get that load and that force through something else, and be it lifting weights or running. There is, literally nothing like bowling. So generally when you get your issues is from kind of doing nothing and then running into a 30-over week. But yeah, there's a lot of data that we know that if you do that, you do something kind of gives, but that's probably the positive with playing kind of all three formats. You don't really get a chance to cool down too much to create too big a hole, but yeah, I definitely feel I'm bowling better when I'm up and just running at the level I know I want to be, yeah.
And Balti, you mentioned three formats. How do you become a three-format bowler?
Well, I was one-format bowler. I've always loved my test cricket. It's my favourite format. I've said it many times. And, 2015 World Cup, I'd only played a handful of white ball games leading into that. And I remember thinking to myself that I'd be lucky to make the 15. And I got picked in the 15, and then I got a fifer against South Africa in a warm-up game. And Baz obviously liked what he saw. And from there, it just kind of really took off. But I never really had a focus of like, oh, this is what I want to do. Like, I just wanted to focus on the things that I knew I could control, and that was, you know, taking pride in my fitness, putting the ball where I wanted to be very accurate and just be relentless, really. And I've been lucky enough that those kind of goals and those things that have driven me have I suppose, unfolded to where I am now. I've been included in so many formats.
And you talked about getting quickly from India over to England. What was the time difference between going from one to the other, and how do you adjust between white ball and red ball that quickly?
It was very quick. 31st, wasn't it? I got in on 31st and played on the 2nd, but I was lucky it was the other way. I think going from T20 cricket into test cricket is a lot easier than kind of just bowling length and then having to bowl Yorkers wide, Yorkers slow ball bounces, etc. But yeah, it's a hard one to be in India for 9 weeks, and I always had in the back of my mind I had a three-match test series coming up, and you're trying to bowl and trying to do everything you can, but yeah, it's not a good look when you're pulling a duke out of your bag in the Mumbai nets.
you had some Duke's balls with you out there?
Well, they were SGs because I couldn't get my hands on some Duke's, but that's a hard one. Like the T20 cricket is a big load on you because the intensity is so high and you've got probably three games a week and stuff, so I knew the physicality side was there. It was just how much did I want to get on a plane and then rock up to Lords and bowl 22 overs in a day. And yeah, I wanted it.
And just going to the IPL, I mean, you were, lucky to be a part of a great Rajasthan Royals campaign. And one of our own, Joss Butler, had an incredible time of it. If you were bowling to Joss, where are you bowling to him?
Yeah, I had many breakfast with Joss, and he had a phenomenal tournament, and everyone knows the class of the guy, but he just takes it to a new level at points in the innings where you thought, you know, what's going on here and what options have you got as a bowler? And obviously I'm happy to be on the side where I'm not having to bowl to him. But, yeah, I don't know. With a guy like that, with his ability to hit all around the ground, I'd probably fall back on the philosophy of making him hit the hardest shot possible. But, yeah, he's
which, so which, which is Which is what for him?
Yeah, I would have said scooping it over fine league's head, but that's probably his favourite. So you'd bring the other ones up and then he'd bang it straight down the ground. So, I'd probably bounce the snot out of him, to be honest.
And then just, so the IPL, everyone sees it as this, an incredible spectacle, razzmatazz. It brings a lot of money to so many people, players, administrators, obviously franchise owners. But how much has it improved your game, over the years playing under that? Because people forget the amount of pressure that you guys are under as overseas players to go and produce magic. How's it improved your game?
I think the best thing about the IPL is the chance to, I suppose, create the friendships with new people and see the game played from a different kind of changing room in a way. And I've played for New Zealand for 10-11 years and had that, I don't know what to call it, but that New Zealand way of playing, that New Zealand style and way of coaching, etc. And then you get the chance to, A, open the bowling with Dale Steyn, you're bowling with Bumrah. I've been coached by Wazzy Makarem. I've had all sorts of people, and just those opportunities that you wouldn't think you'd get as a one of 110 professional cricketers in New Zealand kind of thing. It's definitely been the best part about it. And then you add into the passion and the culture of Indian cricket and what it means to everyone over there. It's truly, truly special. And I'm so lucky. I've had 7 years in the IPL and it's been great every time. So, hopefully a few more.
You mentioned Baz McCullum just then. What's it like turning up in the UK at Lord's and seeing Baz decked out in England kit?
It's a bit naughty. It's taking a bit to get used to seeing him up at top level at Nottingham last week with his Ray-Ban glasses on. And you can just imagine the conversations he's having there in the change room. And if we opened the door, we probably could have heard them, to be honest. But, he's got a great way of instilling a lot of confidence in players and, really backing them. And, it worked tremendously for New Zealand cricket. Obviously a great leader with us. And, he's moving into that next phase of his career. But, he's still the same guy. He's still got a lot of time for us. Let me borrow his golf clubs last week. So I own a couple of Pro Vs, but I'm sure he'll be right.
There's been a lot of chat about how he's sort of freed up the England batsman. What was he like playing for him as a captain, as a bowler? What are the kind of conversations he's having with you at mid-on? And is it the same sort of thing, be yourself?
Yeah, I think be yourself. Just like I touched on, that installing that confidence in you. A new batter comes to the crease. What's the option? What are we trying to do here? We know the first couple of balls are so important to this guy. Should we just hit the wicket and bowl line and length? No, why don't we hit him on the foot or push him back straight away or just an aggressive option. And he'd really back you to do that, back your skills to be able to go out there and express yourself, and also had the other ability to put you in your place if you were not giving what he thought you should be giving. So, great man. And he's moving forward to that coaching part of his career, and it's probably a little bit different than being at mid-off and mid-on and having that ability to be right there in the moment and in the game, etc. But I'm sure he's got some exciting tours and series ahead of him, so it'd be interesting to watch.
Yeah, so I'm just England, whether it's right or wrong, every 2-4 years we play Australia. Obviously, on the back of the winter, England got a good old paste in Australia here in 19. They drew the Ashes for the first time since, I think, 2001 in English conditions, where they managed to grab the urn back to Australia. Having played against this England side and the style of cricket that they've produced under Baz McCullum, do you give them any kind of hope next year in the Ashes series in the UK?
Yeah, I think in the UK, it's conditions you guys are very familiar with and understand very nicely. You probably gain a lot of confidence out of playing here in these series and, testing the style of play that you're trying to operate, I guess. It's exciting to hopefully see the bowlers that you do have on the sideline to be part of the mix and what flavour they offer to the attack that's already there. I look at Tarun Australia. I've only done it a couple of times and we've been pumped every time, to be honest. It's a tough place to play. We get caught up in trying to play how we play around the world, probably how we try to bowl in New Zealand. And I think they show you how it needs to be done there, really. Short spells, intensity, a spinner ties down and end very nicely. And they score big runs. So it's a tough place to tour. But, that'll be a big mark to see where you guys are at, I think, with how you tour there in a few years' time. But, it's exciting. It's brilliant for Test cricket and as a whole. And hopefully it gets a lot more eyes watching it and gets people already barred up to watch the series.
Balti, before I ask you the last five serious questions from Phil Tufnell, he does an either or that we'll end with. I'm going to put you before that in charge of world cricket. What are you going to do for the world game to make sure that Test cricket is still there? You know, and then there's T20 and there's franchises. You're in charge of world cricket. What are you going to do?
Can I say more money? Or no, that's probably
a bit. Yeah, you can say that. You can say, like the LIV Golf Tour, there's a few quid in that one.
Oh, yeah, geez.
Is that what you're after?
When's LIV cricket starting up? I think I want to push this up with the ball, like as a bowler, just to get that battle between bat and ball really flowing. We love seeing the ball fly to the ground and, seeing big runs and stuff. But like I said, motivating that next tier of cricketers, juniors, to want to pick up a ball and be a swing bowler. I'm sure there's lots of kids out there that want to be Pat Cummins and Jimmy Anderson, whoever the bowler is, but there's probably hundreds that want to be Virat, or thousands that want to be him. Rudy, Kane, whoever it is. So, yeah, it's about inspiring the next generation. So how we can keep, thinking how can we really force that is probably a good question that I'd love to hear answered.
So you think there's a worry that the bowlers have just become cannon fodder to a certain extent?
I agree.
I think we might. Yeah, we're not far away from getting just a machine at the end. And one day cricket, for instance, with the two new balls, I think, and really good wickets. I don't know if you follow much ODI cricket in New Zealand, but generally they're rugby grounds with a drop-in wicket that doesn't turn. And you get 312, and then the team chases that in 47 overs, and you think, where did the last 6 hours go? So, yeah, I'd love to see it moving around, turning, 250 plays 250, but also 420 plays 390. Like, I'm happy for anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic, isn't it? They're probably the best one-day game that we've seen over the last few years is the World Cup final in 19, and what were the scores? Low scores.
Exactly.
So dramatic, because there was a little bit there for the bowler, was just a little bit of movement. So I'm absolutely with you, Trent. Right, the serious stuff now. Phil Tufnell's either or, Balti. You can only choose one. There's five questions. We start with Dukes or Kookaburra?
Dukes.
Super over or a bowl off?
A super over until someone blatantly wins.
So you don't believe in boundary count?
No comebacks.
Oh, if I believed in it, it'd still be around, which it isn't.
Golf or surfing?
That's impossible. I love my surfing, and I'm rubbish at golf, so I'm going to say surfing.
ODIs or T20?
T20s.
Right, this is going to be quite a difficult one for you, I think. Wazzy Makram or Sir Richard Hadley?
That's a naughty one. Who's more active on social media? I'll say Wazim.
Excellent to chat to Trent there. Superb bowler. That first stint, Headingley in the second innings.
He's an absolute thoroughbred, world class, skillful, running for you all day, just a top performer, world class.
Yeah, I mean, we interviewed him between the second and third game, and so he gave us an insight into fast bowling, being a three format bowler, running. We talk about all these injured bowlers, what they need to do. Well, it is a running art, isn't it, bowling? You have to run in, and then obviously the action. But I really liked his insight. I like the fact that he'd like one white ball. I think that's a good move in the white ball game, to go back to one white ball, get a bit reverse swing. He wants to spit on the ball again, Phil.
Yeah.
Not happy that you can't spit on it. I think that's right. I think we need... Test cricket needs, a fair balance. And when you get a fair balance, when there's a bit of swing and a bit of seam, it's a better game to watch. So... I'm with him. I think we need to just give the bowlers just a little bit. Let them spit on the ball.
I mean, if there's anything we've seen in this last series, it's that batsmen are in the ascendancy. So give bowlers a chance.
Yeah, we'll be back.
That way you want to see a fair balance, don't you?
We'll be back.
I think he'll end up with over 500 test match wickets.
Yeah.
I think he's that good. He'll break Sir Richard Hadley's record. He's a tremendous bowler.
Do we think India are going to pose a bigger challenge?
I think England will hammer them.
Really?
I do, yeah. I think they haven't played any cricket. They've played a game in Leicester. They're arriving to play against a juggernaut that's played three on the trot. You go back to the World Test Match Championship final when they played New Zealand. New Zealand had played two Test matches and got India in that final because India had not had enough preparation. I think this juggernaut of England will hammer them this week. That's my prediction.
Better bowl inside Ashwin for me. If they've got to play Ashwin. If it spins, I want to see a quality world-class bowler, spin bowler, yeah, on a pitch that's wearing day three, day four, day five, just starting to do a little bit. I want to see how then this team plays that.
Phil, they're going to try and hit him over the holly stand.
Well, many have tried.
Yes, yeah, but not with this ultra aggression. I'd be amazed if England don't just kind of see them off, because I just think they're going to be so hard to play against.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I just think the mentality, everything about this England side for the three games, they'll take it to Friday. I think it's a very, very difficult time for India to just arrive in England, play one game in Leicester and Sunderland, and then the juggernaut hits them like, oops. Yeah.
Do you think they need to approach it like a white ball game then? Because obviously they've got the white ball series afterwards. I mean England aren't they?
Well, what India will try and do is bat for a long period of time. And they could, if the ball's not swinging around, and you know they won't be too worried about the spinner. If the ball's not swinging, India potentially could bat a long period of time, but you know, they've had no time in the middle. And it's very difficult to suddenly arrive and bat for 7 or 8 hours when you haven't had that time in the middle. So I think it's a bit unfair. India are 2-1 up in the series and now they're playing a totally different England team, a totally different management. It's like, well, you shouldn't have gone to the IPL last year, should you?
One thing I wanted to ask you guys about, cast your mind back to the first day and Henry Nicholls' very bizarre dismissal. Yeah. He was caught at mid-off. He smashed the ball straight and it came off Daryl Mitchell's bat. He was batting at the other end.
He middled it.
Sort of middled it. Yes, exactly. flew up and Stokes caught it. What is the weirdest dismissal you two have witnessed, either watching commentary or having played?
Well, I've had a few sort of ricocheted off boots and backs of short legs and body parts of silly mid-offs and things like that and silly points and what have you. And also, Jack Leach had one caught by Sam Billings between the legs.
Yes.
Alex Stewart caught Ian Healy off of me between his legs as well, which is a bit weird. But no, there has been a few like that, but that was a spooky one. I mean, it was incredible. It just shows what kind of Nick Mitchell's in. He's even middling them when they're getting whacked back to him straight to mid-off.
I'll say the funny. I mean, it wasn't a dismissal. I'll just go back to that World Cup final in 19, when Ben Stokes dived in, and that throw hit his bat, and went for four. There's things that you see in cricket that just surprise us all the time. That Henry Nicholls' dismissal this week. That's just. I'm sorry. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. It shouldn't happen. And obviously, if you do the maths of I don't know how you work it out, the maths or the percentage chances of a ball coming from 65 yards from the boundary to a full stretch Ben Stokes, and it hits the middle of his bat and goes for four. Some scientists, please email in and let us know exactly what the percentage chances of that happening are.
I've got another one for you. Middlesex versus, I think it was, it must have been Hampshire, Malcolm Marshall bowling. And I didn't want to get, it was the last ball of the over. Angus Fraser, my mate, was out there. He was trying to farm the strike. And he's sort of like, he's gone back and across to Malcolm Marshall. And Mike, do you know sometimes back in the day when the ball would just hit under the knee roll? And there was that little spot that it sort of like it sometimes sort of went through the pad a little bit. Anyway, I've gone and it sort of hit him under the knee roll and sort of rolled out to mid wicket. I've gone yes and ran. Well, Angus took about 6 strides down the pitch and then fell over because he'd sort of like got a dead leg or a dead knee like that. So I've run past him and he's lying on the floor and he's about 6'8", Angus. So I've run past him. I'm going, get up, Fraze, get up. And he thought he couldn't get up, so he was run out. He was run out and he was on his hands and knees trying to get to the other end.
I beg anyone to, if you want to see a funny run out, if you YouTube Samit Patel run out. Playing for Notts, where he went to and he slipped on a fish.
On a fish?
On a fish?
Well, there wasn't a fish. It looked like he slipped on a fish. Just have a look if anyone wants a bit of humour. And the other bit of humour, if you want a bit of humour on YouTube, just put Phil Tufnell facing Shane Warne, and just have a look at the over from around the wicket.
Listen, I'd just like to finish off that with not out, Mike. It was not out after that over. Thank you very much. Not out.
Love it.
Right, I think that's about all we have time for today. A big thank you to Mike Vaughan and Phil Tufnell, as always. Special thanks to Trent Bolt for giving us some time during the series last week. Mike, Phil and I will be back next week to unpack the one-off test between England and India. In the meantime, you can check out our previous interviews with new Managing Director of England Cricket Rob Key and batting coach Marcus Truscothick, along with others. They're all over on the Vaughney and Tuffers Cricket Club channel. Thanks for downloading this episode and your continued support. If you've enjoyed it, make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. And please spread the word. That's it for now. Until next week, goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.